Welcome, everybody. Rack Addicts After Hours time, pre-Christmas. This will be the last one for just a week. We're just going to take a tiny break, and then we'll be back at you in not quite 2021. My dates are all messed up. I don't know what anything is. Time is an illusion, especially lunchtime. Douglas Adams, lovely stuff. Anyway, we've got Telmo, we've got Pete, the crew is here. Andy was the other side of the building, but he's gone because trains aren't the most convenient modes of transport, especially these days. But we enjoyed his company today, so we will endeavour to transmit our enjoyment of Andy through the internet waves to your brain. One day you will hear him again. Telmo, how have you been?
I've been all right, man. Christmas is coming. This last week was a very intense week for me, as it's a week of deadlines and such.
Mm-hmm. Deadlines, bad deadlines?
Mostly good. Yeah, I try to keep positive. However, it doesn't... some of them look a bit wobbly, but I think I'll make it. It was just... I'm relieved that Christmas is around the corner. Unfortunately, we've had the sad news today about Tier 4... restrictions around our area, but that is not going to take my Christmas spirit away, because I will have a week to watch all the movies I can and drink plenty. So, not too much. I'm not an alcoholic. I mean, I'm talking way too much now. it was a good week. Thank you. I've also, this is a good news, it's a piece of good news. I've had a collaboration that I did, in the first lockdown, so back in March, is finally out.
Oh, lovely.
So it's something that we did. It's quite a rather large production, actually. We did it in March, and it was only now been released. It's a Babylon Sisters cover of Steely Dan, and it features me on the rhythm and lead guitar. There's also my other half, Ina, is doing backing vocals. There's an interesting one, as there's saxophones and keys and there's this whole sort of like sound that has been intensely replicated. So that was I'm happy to see the final result, and kudos to my musical friends and Joe and Ben Thorogood. Kudos to you, and Merry Christmas to everybody that's listening on this side and that side.
Excellent. Was that perchance why you may have been in Burfield Recording Studios brewing something? Ooh,
no,
more secret brewing.
That's
brewings.
Something more secret. Ooh. Unless you follow me on Instagram.
And then that's where I saw it. Where can we find this new release?
The new release, unfortunately, we had a bit of an issue with PRS as things are very delayed on their side due to, obviously, again, that's the excuse of everything. So obviously we can't release just yet. We are again expecting January to be the day. We were hoping for the beginning of January. We were aiming for the first. We don't quite think PRS may get back at us in time to have this released. But is going to be released, and I'm really excited with the product. We've got artwork done, we've got press shootings, press pictures done as well. So it's just about building the hype now, I suppose,
yeah,
and all
the
that
hype
marketing
train
business.
Where will it be on the internet?
Well, in all of your streaming services, even the ones I hate. It will be available.
iTunes Music. I mean, what a glorious host of this podcast. Anyway.
No, we love you guys. We love you. If it wasn't for the streaming services, we wouldn't be here, or you wouldn't be listening to us. So, absolutely, yeah, and all streaming services. Eventually, it will be released as a physical copy towards next year as an EP format, or maybe a 12-inch single, double-sided single.
If there's vinyl, sign me up without even asking. I will buy one.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that.
Excellent.
But I will provide more news about
that. Yeah. One day, I will get my Birdsworth vinyl. Luke, Birdsworth vinyl to Ben. Thank you.
Today.
Hey, Pete, how have you been? You were feeling a bit better today.
Yeah, I think I'm hopefully on the mend. I had some diagnostics, as I said last week, done. That was good in the respect that it didn't show anything too sinister. So I'm still not quite myself, but hopefully as we get into the new year, I'll start sort of getting some strength back and just feeling generally better. But I've been trying to get my sort of music mojo going this week a bit, and sort of going to the studio and thinking, look, there's a ridiculous amount of equipment in here. It's a sort of crisis of conscience. If I'm not using it, why have I got it? So yeah. I'm sure we've all gone through that on several. And I know you have on occasions. You know, you're quite adept at sort of cleansing yourself of everything and then starting afresh. So,
I haven't started afresh at all. Although I have an announcement soon. Not an announcement. It's just very exciting for me. Anyway, Pete.
I've been trying to get in there and sort of get the studio cranked up and trying to get inspired. It's not that easy in these sort of dark days of winter and all the sort of restrictions and the ongoing pandemic.
If you aim for really doomy techno, you might capture the mood quite nicely.
Yeah, I'm not really into that. I'm quite into uplifting and euphoric sort of stuff, and I've got to try and conjure it. So what I tend to do is start studying pieces of classical music and other pieces of music that film scores and things like that, where there's very interesting chord progressions or other elements that really sort of do something for me, and try and break them up and try and understand where the magic is and what's happening, and can I sort of not copy them but use the essence of what they're trying to do. I
mean, leverage the power.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what kind of what classical music was throughout the ages, wasn't it? People always building on other people's compositions or rearranging their compositions, or, you know, they weren't so het up by copyright and all this type of thing. Now you have to have a merest rhythm that sort of isn't the same, but kind of just sort of sounds the same, and you're in court and someone's trying to sue you, assuming you've had some sort of hit.
Beware that chords cannot be owned. So you can use chord progressions from anyone else. No one's going to sue you for that. Just
really?
By the way, yes.
So how come the what was the case recently where they had the owners of a state of a particular artist?
Was it the Ed Sheeran case?
It wasn't the Ed Sheeran case. It was the one with the collaboration, and I'm struggling to think who it was. What was the guy that did Blurred Lines?
Robin Thicke?
Yeah, it was Robin Thicke and somebody else, and they did a track, and it was a bit like, was it like a Marvin Gaye track or something? Mm-hmm. It had a rhythm, but it did, when you listen to it, you go, it's nothing like it.
Mm.
But the people who own the Marvin Gaye, or the family that has the control of the Marvin Gaye estate, won the case. There was millions of dollars.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is that in court, people may try to sue you for borrowing chords, but that's just, under the law, chords are impossible to be plagiarized.
Really?
Yes.
So how far can you go with a chord progression to...
No, you don't need to go very far. I mean, chords are chords. It depends what you put on top. That's the melody. It's what really makes something.
Okay, so it's the melody.
Plagiarized.
But chord, you know, a chord progression can have a melody in it. It can form a melody, can't it? So that has other elements, the timing and other components that give it its flavour, or you know.
Yes, if you're a pianist or a guitar player or a player that is actually harmonising as is playing chords, I guess you can do that. But I mean, in most cases, you just can't do that. Look at Adam Neely's. He did a whole half an hour video about this. That's what I've found out, and I was like astonished by it.
I'll have to look into it further. I'm always very cautious about copying or anything like that, and I tend to just try and work out where the magic, what's happening in these chord transitions that makes it so wonderful. I mean, there's always other elements. I mean, the way the whole thing's been orchestrated, or you know, there's other factors in there. But yeah, so I've been trying to generally grasp for some inspiration, and just generally occupy myself and pull myself out the sort of mental fog that I've been finding myself in. And hopefully, I mean, if we can just sort of get through the current period that we're going through at the moment, and the vaccinations can be rolled out, which they are rolling out, but if we can really get down there, and as we go on, it's just getting through January and February, really, you know, maybe a bit of March. The weather is as much to do with my general mood about everything as anything else, and the rough weather. I mean, in the UK, we never really get winter, but it's generally just wet. Wet and cold and soggy and horrible. It's not like we get sort of crispy white winters and you can sort of snuggle up next to a nice crackling fire. Mind you, I did that, having said that, changing the subject the other day. I was I found on the YouTube. It's not my YouTube recommendation, but I found a 7-hour video in 4K of a fire.
Oh, I've got that on most of the days.
It works really well. I thought, oh, this is amusing. Then I put it on. I went, oh, it's actually got something about it. Good audio, and you had these cracking and spitting logs, and
get a hot water bottle, and you're in.
Yeah, oh. Yeah. It kind of worked. I was quite. Yeah, I thought this is good. If you know, you could have it's sort of the modern equivalent. Everyone huddled around the television, but it's just displaying this.
We're
fireplace.
Missing the smell, though.
But I thought, what a good. Who thought of doing that? You video a fire in good quality for an extended period of time and upload it. So they had. I don't know how long people have been watching it, but again, as I said earlier, it was about 7 hours in total if you watch the whole thing, and it's been watched several million times.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if it's something you just leave on in the background, I imagine it's got pretty good watch statistics compared to other long videos.
Does that count as one time, though?
It'll count as one view, but actually the algorithm does treat videos on YouTube differently depending on how quickly viewers leave the page.
Interesting.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder all the other things you could have, you know, just like, I mean, I'm sure they're already, I'm saying this and someone's mostly already done it and it's there, but you could just have sort of crashing waves or something.
Oh, yeah. Be great. Pete, you should, if you need a bit of a cobweb buster for the studio stuff, have you ever tried any 3-module challenges? They're pretty fun.
What, so pick 3 modules and try and do the best?
Yeah, it's best if it's something really stupid, like not sequencer synth voice effect. That's really boring. You got to go for something like a wave folder, an LFO, and like sample and hold, or something weird, and just see what weird audio you can get out of it.
And that would be a very good way to really get intimate with these modules.
Exactly.
I mean, it was kind of my intention with the small case that I still haven't built, which I was supposed to build months ago, but that was the idea that I'd not only have a small case to take out and do live stuff with, but I could just pick select modules and really focus in on and really work those modules and understand every nuance and every combination, really get a handle. Because I was in such a buying spree at one stage and buying so many modules, I mean, it was ridiculous. I think it was, you know, at one stage it was one a week.
Oh, man.
And eventually you just got so many that you tend to... I've got modules that I've never used. You
How
know, I bought them, they've
this?
Gone in... Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And so do you just change them occasionally? Do you just like,
do
have
swap,
a backup?
Yeah, yeah, I do swap things in and out, but I've really got to justify having this much equipment because it's just, you know, The money's not completely squandered. I mean, at the end of the day, which I've always said, at the end of the day, it all can be sold. You
it's
know,
got
the money,
decent resale value.
Yeah,
it
could all be recovered. But at the same time, while I've got it, I really should be using it. And you really have to be quite disciplined and sort of say, right, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do things.
Well, there are brewings in the ModCaf corner. So if something does brew that might be a liveable something... then just let me know.
My Swan flight cases for my two Bose S1 Pros turned up, so they're fully flight cased and portable. I've just got to grab a set of tripods for them from the store.
For 50p, obviously.
Or whatever. And then I'll be all set. So I really only need the leisure battery, then I'm all set that I can power whatever instrument I'm going to bring, whether it be modular case or the... wave state or whatever that I'm going to take out, and the speakers are obviously, I think it's an 8-hour battery on the Bose, isn't it?
So I do have to say, I do love my Bose S1 Pro. It's a really nice.
They are fantastic. They are. I mean, I've always said it's a product that sells itself.
Yeah.
Generally, people come in and they ask about a small PA, and they generally ask about maybe a Roland Street Cube or one of the others. And then
it's just a no-brainer, isn't it?
You play them that, and suddenly they came in. They were going to spend a maximum of £250, and they go out after spending £500 on one of those. But it just, how can you, you know, once you've heard it, you've got no choice, have you?
No.
It buys itself out of your wallet.
Yes.
One interesting thing I did have with a customer once is they called it a Bose, which I thought was kind of... I've never heard... I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it, but that was kind of interesting.
I'm assuming it's Bose. Just Bose, but I can see why...
Bose Mourinho.
Phonically spelling it out, it would kind of possibly do that to you.
Totally. It is a bit light, actually, on the news this week, but one thing that I did notice while Pete and I were ensconced in the office downstairs today at work, if you have €22,900, you could be the lucky owner of a Schmidt synthesizer. That's 8 whole voices of polysynth that are good. presumably, because nobody's ever really seen one. Yeah, €22,900. Bargain, probably. I don't know, probably not. I wouldn't waste your money.
Schmidt. How's
Schmidt.
That?
S-C-H-M-I-D-T.
How new is that brand?
I don't know. It's been around for a while. This is another batch of kind of 25, so limited run, obviously, for that much money. They had a bit of trouble getting some rare components. It's been around for several years. I'd say five or more, most likely. Pete, do you know any? I don't know anything about it, but it's just kind of funny. Expensive synth.
We should just dig in deeper into it. Why is it expensive?
The idea was a synth without compromise. Mm. So if you know the Matrix Brute with the cool lift-uppy panel, which I'm a bit of a sucker for that, you know, it's unlimited modulation possibilities, supposedly. It's only 8 voice poly, but it's supposedly very flexible. I think it's got quite a few different filter types, rare parts, stuff like that. But yeah, is it worth that? Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, it's one of those. It's even beyond that kind of craving price. It's so expensive. It's you know.
Yeah. Mm. Just put it out of your head straight away.
I mean,
there
is a number of synths that I would buy if I could get hold of them, is it because the synth is actually good, or is it because you can't get them?
Yeah, it's a good point, and maybe we'll never know.
Well,
yeah.
the one I should have bought when they were available, when we had the very small selection, would have been the. The proper ARP 2600, the core re-release.
Yeah.
And I should have got one. I don't know why I didn't get one. I didn't really... I suppose it's because I've got the TTSH kit that I thought, well, I've got the equivalent of that. But now seeing how much they've accumulated in value immediately, that would be one that I would consider. I mean, it's almost within the threshold of affordability.
Yeah.
And the other one which I would very much love to get is a Schwaemann S1 Mark II.
Wait, didn't you have one of those on...
I was kind of on a list, and unfortunately when the opportunity to get it came up, the finances weren't aligned because I had invested and I was owed money and just didn't have the money at the time, which was unfortunate. If I was able to just buy one, and Schneider's Bureau in Berlin is the prime supplier because they've got a direct relationship with Wawa Schwaemann. And I'm not sure how it works, but the production runs are so limited. But I sort of consider that as the Rolls Royce of small semi-modular synths, possibly.
Mm. Mm. It's a fairly standard monosynth, but it's got the Schwaemann name.
Yeah, I mean, people seem to... I mean, it might be sort of one of these things that its sort of reputation is substantially more than the reality of the thing, but who knows if you can't get your hands on one.
There's
one company in the UK that has them advertised on their website, and I keep tempting to phone them up and say, really, you can actually get hold? I doubt. They've got them at a reasonable price. They do come up second hand, but they are generally substantially more than a new one would cost if you could get hold of a new one. And you know, there's not, if you look on Reverb occasionally on eBay, you will see the odd one. There's generally one or two maybe on offer, and that I'm talking across the world, so in either in Europe or in the US at any one time. And preferably, I like the olive green one.
Mm.
I quite like what they call it, the eggshell, the kind of cream.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know. It doesn't do it for me. It's got to be the olive green.
I'm a sucker for green, especially olive.
There's something about it. It's
green,
very subtle. Yeah. It's got a kind of pseudo-military look to it.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely got that vibe. it's a cool one. Maybe one day we will experience some of these synths in the flesh.
Any others that you would... fantasy synths?
Well, only because of the price and because it's kind of funny, the one we mentioned on the podcast before, the Neef Audio or Knife Audio Neefonium or Knifeonium, that vacuum tube synth.
Yeah.
Just because it's similarly priced and ridiculous. But it, realistically, I've never really encountered one in demos or anything. The ARP Quadra holds a certain something for me because of its Genesis connotations.
Mm.
Really, I just like a Juno.
I was going to say, if there would be one...
A real one, which one?
Juno 60 for me. I'll be happy with the 60.
Not the 106?
No.
To be honest, I would take any Juno that bit me in the face. Yeah. Even if it was one that had no MIDI and I couldn't be bothered to get the retro kit.
Yeah.
Retrofit, sorry. I I just like it.
As I always say to customers, you know, the next best thing, in my opinion, I mean...
DeepMind.
It would be the DeepMind.
Yeah.
I just don't really want to own anything Behringer again.
I almost consider it not... I don't think of it in the same way as I do with the other stuff.
It's the early stuff, went really early in the Midas acquisition, wasn't it?
Yes, and it's if you look at it, the way it's fabricated, the whole construction, the way it works, the reliability, almost imagine someone else made it.
Yeah, let's put it this way. In my case, I'm very reluctant to kind of like work on building my pedal board because exactly of that, Ben. It's like I don't want to spend a lot of money at the moment because I don't have a lot of money, but I want to buy something that's of value. I don't want to buy a Behringer pedal. I don't want to buy Tone City pedals or maybe, what's the other brand?
Mooer.
So many brands. Mooer.
Yeah.
There's plenty of cheap pedals out there. They're great, I'm sure, but I want to be able to buy something of value. And
something that will be with you for a long time.
Exactly. Because we've all been in the loophole of, oh, why do I have this? This costs me 40 quid. Just get rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, you're running down that rabbit hole that I really appreciate is that tactility and the quality of build and sound. And it's just a thoroughly enjoyable object, as well as obviously being a really good musical tool if you pick the right thing.
Yeah.
It's totally what I'm about as well.
I'm certainly going to look at weeding a few things out of the studio that just are completely redundant.
Mm. Well, let us know.
And then I will re-employ the funds that I get from them to buy some other bits and pieces.
You mentioned a Dark Series Matriarch.
Yes, I'm certainly thinking that that would be a reasonable purchase. And again, something that I think would hold its value reasonably well.
It looks so good in front of the moth.
So I'm going to make some inquiries when I'm back in the store tomorrow to see the availability, what it's like. I know that we've got some more coming in, but I mean, I don't know how many we had in and how popular they were. I mean, I think all the ones we had went.
For the price, I mean, Matriarch's Dark Series and Normal, they've sold a lot better than I thought they would, given money and how kind of weird they are.
Yes. But it's quite a nice thing on its own. As I said, I'm going to use it to sort of be the sort of master keyboard for my modular setup. It's all going to work, and I think it'll just finish it off. And but I'm not going to just buy it out. The only way I can justify it is just to dispose of a few other bits and pieces that are redundant, and then I feel vindicated when I actually buy it. I won't have sort of any buyer's remorse or anything like that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mind you, I don't tend to have much of a buyer's remorse, much unless the item is a bit of a disappointment.
The Erica Synth Zenderlay.
Yeah, I mean, but that, as I say, that went back within a day, literally a day or 2 days. So I'm not averse. I wasn't one for returning things, but now I'm not. You know, I'm not that afraid of if it really doesn't cut it. But I tend to do. I mean, we're lucky that we get a lot of exposure to equipment before we purchase anything, so we've got a fair idea of what things are like before we've actually expended any actual finances. So that's one advantage of working in the store. And
definitely, or it's too tempting, one or the other.
Yes. So anything else that you would think? The only other thing I could think of, obviously, it'd be a full size Moog modular would be nice.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
But at the same time, there's plenty of third party equivalents that are mostly just as good.
Moon, Oakley.com.
Yes.
All sorts.
Yeah, and Club of Knobs.
Yeah.
And Moon Modular.
Lots of stuff. Speaking of Moog Modular, we were talking about the Junkie XL Reverb sale.
Yes.
I had a quick peek. It's actually all very reasonably priced. Lots of the modular stuff is going.
It?
Some 750 items in that sale. So there's
good grief.
A lot of stuff going. Although,
so much clutter.
When I did the old sort by price high to low and low to high just to pick it out. If you go low to high, it's like... Dope for multiple, dope for multiple, dope for multiple, .com multiple. And it's all the really cheap modular stuff and a few like crap pedals and bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am very excited to get home because my Loam Geophone has arrived. Got a picture of it from the other half. My seismic recording device, it is here, as well as the Electro Ushi.
So tell us more about that.
I don't know, I haven't played it. It's at home. So it arrived today, but that'll be... sticking it, I think the first thing I'm going to do is stick it to the side of the fridge because there might be a bit of vibration potentially in there if it's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Washing machine might be fun.
Oh, that might be cool.
But the Electro Ushi, which I think is how it's pronounced, electromagnetic recording things, it's going to be fun. I'm hopefully going to go on a little trip with Greg from from ACM, one of my friends from there, and we'll have a bit of a sample collecting thing. He's a kind of a games audio designer kind of chap. He's got some really cool ideas and ears for that kind of stuff.
So was that a kind of Christmas present to yourself?
No, I'd been on the mailing list and keeping an eye out for it for ages, and I got the email saying it's going to be on sale at 4 p.m. tomorrow, and I thought, I've got to do it. So I've wanted one for ages, and I've mentioned before, field recording is something that's really kept the enthusiasm for me. So I'm excited. And what I might do, actually, Pete, is maybe if I've got some interesting files, I might ping a couple over just to stick maybe 10 seconds in maybe to the next podcast after...
Ooh, nice. Excellent, yeah.
Well, the end of December, New Year, potentially. But that will probably round us up into our little multimedia recommendation-y section-y majig.
Well, there's Luke's.
Oh, of course, Luke's spacey bit. I totally forgot. Of course, I've just destroyed the fun time when I get to cue Pete in very well for the magical section that is otherworldly and is definitely called Luke's spacey bit. I'm sorry, Luke. I was just in such a rush to get home to my fun recording time gear. Please take us to worlds far superior than ours, since at the moment we've got some unfortunate announcements in terms of going to see our families this holiday season. So take us into the great beyond.
Hello there. I hope you are well. I hope you are safe. I hope you're enjoying the festive period. If you're working, I'm sorry, and I hope that it isn't too painful for you. If you're seeing your loved ones, I hope you're enjoying it. If you're not, well, I hope that you're safe and well, and that they are too. Let's talk about space, shall we? The year of 2020 in space has been incredible. One of the few things about 2020 that's made me happy is the amount of crazy things that are going on in space and some of the interesting achievements we've had. Earlier this year, we launched the Mars 2020 mission carrying the Perseverance rover. The rover is on the way to the Red Planet as we speak and should land in February 2021. I'll be very excited to cover that story when it happens. I'm not sure whether we'll see anything of great detail in terms of live footage. I certainly think we'll get live telemetry, perhaps even a 3D render of the process as the landing sequence takes place. But certainly it's one to look forward to next year. I hope Perseverance makes its way down to the planet because it has some very interesting groundwork to lay. One of the primary parts of its mission is a sample analysis and storage for a later sample return mission, something that will be carried out by a secondary or tertiary craft en route to Mars from NASA at some point in the future. So obviously that begins with Perseverance landing safely on the Red Planet. We've had 20 years of constant habitation aboard the ISS. Not the strongest of space habitats, nor the most airtight, but it certainly is a stepping stone on the long journey to interstellar, or maybe even just stellar, habitation at this stage. I would settle for, you know, a sort of expanse-style industrial space colony. That'd be pretty cool. But certainly, the ISS is an important first step to understanding how humans behave in space, how we feel, how we decompose, unfortunately, in low or microgravity, as it were. So the work that's been carried out over that long period of time certainly couldn't happen without it. May that data continue to bear fruit, and well, certainly at least may it continue to be informative in some way. We had an update on the long-awaited James Webb Space Telescope. Unfortunately, we won't be seeing much more on that until probably October next year, but certainly one to watch as we edge closer and closer to the eventual activation of that gargantuan and most impressive of deep space telescopes. Earlier in the year, phosphine gas was detected on Venus. It's thought to be a potential sign of life. Various papers and claims have been made since that might throw that kind of assumption into disregard, but one thing is clear, we certainly need to visit Venus because the presence of that gas is odd, and it may not be an indication of life. Certainly it is a very, very low chance of happening. One of the things that is often said in astronomy is that 99.9% of the time it's just not aliens, but we'll see. I'm not sure if I would consider life on another planet from our own solar system as alien. I'd probably call it maybe a cousin. Considering how vast the universe is, I doubt any bacteria found in the clouds of Venus would be all that alien. But we shall see, hopefully, one day, if we ever send any probes in that general direction. More recently, and covered extensively by other media outlets, is the collapse of the Arecibo 300-meter telescope, which is just a very sad and unfortunate occurrence in radio and radar astronomy. Arecibo will not at this stage be replaced, as far as we know, by anything on this side of the planet, but there is, of course, the FAST, the Fast 500-meter telescope in China. It's very interesting. It does roughly the same thing. Unfortunately, however, it does not have radar capability, which made Arecibo so unique and effective in its ability to track near-Earth asteroids. Although it is worth bearing in mind that Arecibo can only point in one direction, it did still give us a very, very large area to work with. So that's a shame, but hopefully something soon will be developed. Perhaps most recently, Hayabusa 2 successfully dropped off a sample from the asteroid Ryugu, which it visited in November 2019. After spending a year orbiting and collecting bits from the asteroid, Hayabusa 2 flew all the way back to Earth, only to drop off a sample return pod, which fell through the atmosphere, and landed exactly as it was intended to, somewhere in Australia, parachuting down safely to the surface of the Earth. Scientists recently uncovered the pod and looked inside to find plenty of sample material from the asteroid Ryugu, which they're going to spend the foreseeable future analysing, testing, and hopefully determining some interesting things about our solar system and the composition of asteroids like Ryugu. Beyond space news, I wanted to give you some things to try and occupy your time. I'm aware that some of us may not be spending our Christmas with our families, and so we may be wanting to spend some of those vouchers on books or audiobooks, or perhaps you've got a spare moment to watch a Netflix series and so on. So I'll spend some time going through some things that I've enjoyed this year, last year, and in previous years, and hopefully you will too as a fellow space enthusiast. First of all, if you have the ability to obtain an audiobook, I would thoroughly recommend Ian M. Banks's The Culture series, as read by Peter Kenny. The Audible versions are great, though you can find them elsewhere. I would thoroughly recommend the audio rendition of this series, because Peter Kenny really does do justice to the world of the culture as envisioned by Ian M. Banks. It's commonly said that you should start with The Player of Games. I would also agree to a point, although Consider Phlebas is one of the best novels in the series. It gives you an insight into the universe, not from the main kind of character's point of view, more from their antagonist's point of view. But that said, it is a gruesome and difficult book to read if you're not already acquainted with the series, so I would definitely start with Book 2, The Player of Games, if you're more of a casual science fiction fan, or if you've never heard of the culture before in your life. Otherwise, the entire series is fantastic, it's worth a read, and it's absolutely unparalleled in its vision of the space opera, which I thoroughly recommend. If you want to spend some time watching TV, the new series of The Expanse has just dropped on Amazon Prime. They're going to be putting out one episode a week, but there are four other seasons to watch. The Expanse was originally a series of books written by James S.A. Corey, which is the pen name for two authors working together. The audiobook version is also fantastic, narrated by one Jefferson Mays. The series essentially looks to a sort of near-future space industrial complex run by various factions in human society that we can kind of predict and also trace back to influences that are real in the world today. It's certainly one that I would recommend to all space enthusiasts. It's kind of gained itself the moniker of hard sci-fi because gravity and time are certainly a key factor in the books. Some of those things have been truncated for the show, but not many. It is fairly faithful. Some characters have been amalgamated for the sake of condensing plot lines into something more coherent for the TV audience, but overall both forms of the medium are incredibly enjoyable, and I would thoroughly recommend you to check that out. If you want something a little bit more realistic, I'd thoroughly recommend anything written by Professor Brian Cox and Andrew Cohen. The Planets and the Human Universe get a honourable mention because those books are brilliant and well narrated by Samuel West if you're into your audiobooks. But Forces of Nature is the one I have to recommend. It's the first of Brian Cox's books I read. It's not strictly a space book, but it does feature some of mechanics that are relevant to relativity, for instance, is a strong feature in that book. And it breaks it down in a way that most people can understand. And finally, no list of Christmas reading for science nerds would be complete without a mention of Cosmos. This time it's the follow-up series called Cosmos Possible Worlds. This is actually the book version I'm recommending, though there is a show and an audiobook. This is written by Andrian, the surviving partner and co-writer of Carl Sagan. Andrian has gone on to do her own work, and Cosmos Possible Worlds is a kind of love letter to everything that was great about the original Cosmos series, and also kind of a hopeful prayer that maybe the human race will take some stock of what we've done, what we could do, and what we could be. I'll let Anne explain it. She can do it better than me. So that brings us basically a bit to a close. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy some of the recommendations we've given. As always, we welcome your feedback. If you want to get in touch with us via the Rack Addicts Facebook, please do. Let us know what you think of my suggestions, or if you have any suggestions yourself, or any things that you want to hear on the show, do feel free to get in touch. Otherwise, I'll return you to our co-hosts for the end of the show. Stay safe now. Bye-bye.
Wonderful stuff, Luke. Thank you so much, as always, for sharing your passion, enthusiasm, knowledge, and most importantly, majestic beard, as you might have seen on when I eventually get that video up on YouTube. But what a lovely chap he is. We're lucky to know you, Luke. Now, YouTube recommendation times. I actually do have one off YouTube, which I think I haven't recommended before. It's a modulary synthy boy time artist, State Azure, on YouTube. Has a big old MDLR desktop case, so similar format to your Moth, Pete, though less lovingly handmade, as far as I'm aware. He's definitely got a Peak, Digitact and Tone, Hydrosynth, I believe, and does some really great ambient stuff. Did a great cover of something from Mass Effect, if you've played that game. Really nice bit from there. Cover that. Did a really cool ambient rendition of In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins, without any of the big drum fills.
Oh, I've seen that. You've shown me
that. Yeah, I found I didn't miss the drum fill, which can only mean it was an incredible cover.
Mm.
But State Azure, definitely worth a go if you need some chill vibes for your evenings this winter. Who's next?
Right, I've got another YouTube, surprise. The channel is called DIY Perks.
Oh, I know the guy.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff.
There's a guy called Matt. He doesn't put out a great deal of videos, but you know the amount of effort that's gone in, you can see why he's had to take his time. So basically, he gets various bits and pieces. Sometimes it's recycled, upcycled things like laptops and other bits of electronics and other materials, and puts them together and makes interesting DIY projects, which are quite interesting and inspiring. Maybe to recreate, and it's obviously just interesting to see him do it. So things like where was the one I made a PC out of wooden rope. That was one of them.
Cool.
I was just looking at, and the one I watched recently, I don't know if any of you guys have seen those. Have you seen those sort of daylight light skylight things?
I mean they're
quite expensive. Mm-hmm. They're architectural, and they use sort of various sort of Fresnel lenses and diffusers, and they fit them into sort of these subterranean type of basements where there's no actual natural light, but it actually looks like it's the sun shining in the sky.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're very realistic. And he actually made one in this particular episode using an old satellite dish and some sticky sort of reflective material. So,
so
that
cool.
gave him a convex projector and then a very high-powered LED using the receiver on the, or where the receiver would mount on the satellite dish, shining at it and then firing it through, as I say, a diffuser, which was made of two sheets of Perspex, but to give it the sort of opaqueness that he wanted, he actually put a liquid and then you add soapy water. And
wow.
It created, and it's all, and but it worked. It worked perfectly. And it there's such an intensity, but it, because it has the, when you look at the sun, it always looks like it's an infinity. You know, the way that it actually works, and the, because the sun's so far away, light travels in straight lines. It's not sort of fanning out like a light that would be local to you. You know,
yeah.
Sort of like a street light or a spotlight or something like that would, unless it's a specialist spotlight that's got a very tight beam. But you know, light tends to not be coherent, and it diffuses and arcs out. But yeah, that was an interesting one, and there's many more. So they're quite interesting to watch in themselves, but some of them are quite inspirational. I think, well, that's a good idea. I mean, there was quite a good one of building these LED diffused LED strips, but they were used for video, so you want to get really nice warm lighting and it was very lightweight and quite an easy project. He's very good at what he does, and there is quite a few videos, but it looks like he's putting, you know, maybe he does sort of 6 to 8, maybe 10 videos a year, but I would imagine there's a sort of ones that have got quite a long shelf life, so he's mostly getting quite a lot. Yeah, he's getting sort of, you know, some of these have got 2.2 million views, 3.2 million views, so, you know, it's obviously worthwhile for him in that respect, but as I say, they're quite informative and educational. So that's DIY perks.
They're definitely good fun, those ones. I think the one I watched, he was making an incredibly high-powered LED torch that he had to water cool because it was, you know, so much heat from the thing. It was ludicrously bright. Good fun. Telmo, what if I just emphasised your name differently? Telmo.
Well, like the Portuguese say, Telmo.
Telmo.
Yeah.
There we go.
Well,
what have you got for us?
Just to round up, a little musical Christmas moment from my good friends Pocket Dragon. Last year, they've released a series of videos. It's basically, they call themselves Gangsta Funk, and it's very much funk. It's very good stuff, very good musical stuff. It's recorded on the top loft of the bass player's place, and it's just lovely in-house videos. The colors are great, very Christmassy. They're all dressed as you know, like Christmas suits and that sort of stuff, like Santa. It's very much fun. There's some proper mojo into it. If you just want to chill, have some good vibes, and still have the Christmas theme represented whilst you're, you know, just having a drink or just chilling at home, just check on Pocket Dragon. They've also got a couple of albums on Spotify and all the streaming services. They're a really good band. And as I said, mates of mine. So, you know, it's one of those things. You just got to share what's good, especially if it comes from people close to you.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for tuning in this year. You might catch us once before we hit the big old 2021. Like I said, I don't know where we are, who we are, what the date is. Is time even real? Who cares? Most importantly, you're listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. You can find us on your favourite streaming services, favourite podcasting services. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you, or you will catch us. I never really figured out which way round it is. Next time.